You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where woman gets engaged to a chandelier is not even close to the most farcical story we've ever covered. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you enjoy witnessing the farce along with me, why don't you invite some of your friends to witness along with us? The more people that witness, the more the farce becomes obvious. Alternately, if you've enjoyed the show this whole entire previous season, head over to themidside.com/awards and submit some nominees and vote for our year-end award show that's coming up pretty quickly. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital and no longer Bears country, hopefully, Daniel T. Richards.
No longer Bears country. I'm curious, have we dropped the travel metaphor?
Yes.
Are we no longer stamping our passport into the midside land?
Yes, that largely has to do with the fact that I was also told I come across as cold or dickish by saying, tell a friend. So I'm trying to be more warm and welcoming in the opening.
Justin,
I'm trying to be a better tour guide.
The warm and welcoming Justin M. Lesneski. I look forward to this weird character.
Wow.
I look just forward
a
to
more
this
warm,
contrived nonsense.
So I'm taking it the new opening wasn't welcoming and warm. Is that what we're saying?
No, it's perfectly it was perfectly you.
Okay, then. Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
It was perfectly warm, Justin. It was on this, and everyone's ready for their journey, just for you to be their tour guide to take them on a magic carpet ride. And they don't even know what they can find.
That's right.
See, Daniel, here's the thing.
It's a whole new world. You're very good.
You're going to give me crap for the travel metaphor all this time, but I never stooped to the level of an Aladdin reference. I never did.
You wanted to, though. Or I could tell in your voice reference every single week you wanted to.
That's too sexualized. And speaking of sexualizing things, I want to ask you guys about something and talk about something before we get into the news right now. So I made a quip about it in the opening about this woman. There was a story. If anyone follows me on Facebook, I posted it on Facebook. This 33-year-old woman, I believe she's British. I hope she's British because if this is an American, fuck all of us. She supposedly fell in love with a chandelier. And she's now engaged to this chandelier.
It's a very old chandelier.
Yeah, it doesn't fucking matter how old the chandelier is. Like, that was one of the things about the news story,
right? You
get
engaged to a chandelier that old, you know the age difference just isn't gonna, it's not gonna work out.
We all know how this goes.
They're very brittle. It's just gonna fall apart very easily.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the thing. The news stories are covering it like, oh my god, the age difference is what matters here.
Yeah, she's really just a plated gold digger.
How many of these did you write? How many did you write?
He's got just a list he's going down.
Well, fuck you. Let me just crumble that shit up.
So she called herself Objectum Sexual, I believe is what it was.
You had a great
it sounds like
about,
it sounds like a Harry Potter spell, right?
Yeah.
Right? Objectum Sexual.
That's right.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like a Harry Potter joke. And this isn't the only chandelier she's in love with, right? Or inanimate object she's in love with. Like, she goes to bed supposedly with other ones, even though she's engaged to this one.
Really?
Now, we've covered stories on here where people have gotten married, or I don't mean people, specifically women. That's an interesting thing I hadn't thought about. These stories are not men. It's not like man gets engaged to vacuum. Never. We've seen men do stupid shit with vacuum, but we've never seen them get engaged to them. And we've seen women, you know, get married to themselves, get engaged to themselves, all that kind of stuff. But now it's an inanimate object. Now, I don't want to use a slippery slope argument, right? Because we saw people say if you legalize gay marriage, you will then allow people, it'll be a slippery slope to people getting married to horses and things like that. I think a lot of them are going, see, look, If you want to marry whoever you want, if you want to marry a chandelier, that's fine. Here in the Midside, we're not here to talk about what you can and can't do. I want to talk about what the cultural effects are. And specifically, at the end of the article I posted, there was a quote from the girl, from the woman, who said, "I'm not hurting anyone by doing this." Now,
except
I want to ignore the fact that she's hurting herself.
There you go.
Right? Obviously, she's already been hurt. She already has issues, and she's continuing to hurt herself by perpetuating. This is perpetuating whatever issues she has. But what I want to ask is about the interconnectedness of us all.
Mm.
Isn't she hurting society by trying to normalize this? Like, I get to a certain extent when social justice people are like, we can't normalize certain things. It's like, yeah, abuse should not be normalized. Like, I agree. And certain behaviors should not be normalized. But isn't it to our own detriment? Isn't it in my own self-interest to say that this is bad and we shouldn't normalize this? Isn't it to everyone's detriment if we normalize things like this? And that's my basic problem when I read a story like this. Yeah, it's funny, haha, you know, this woman has so many issues and she has such self-esteem issues. I mean, she dresses like a 90-year-old woman and she's 33. That's funny. But at the same time, isn't there something very tragic and scary about this? Because, quote, I'm not hurting anyone.
Hmm.
I mean, it's she's referencing something that is true, which is that she has the right to do these things. But that's just a rationalization, you know?
Yeah, it's 100%
a rationalization.
The same
could be said of someone who's just a heavy drinker. Like, oh, I'm not hurting anyone myself. Well, I guess, but that is not the primary issue. No one is arguing,
James,
that you're hurting other people.
You walked right into my straight edge trap there, my friend. I'm being a little facetious because I didn't intend to go in this direction, but this is the same problem I have with like college drinking culture and everything and the way we treat alcohol in this culture. Yes, just because you have a right to do something doesn't mean you should do it. And what happens when you're harming the overall, are you harming the overall culture by doing these things? I would say by trying to normalize this and also by drinking to a heavy amount like you're saying, James. I'm not saying you do, I'm saying people who do. I would say both those things are harming more than the more than themselves. They're harming everyone.
Yeah. All points well taken. I have somewhat of a mental block, I don't know, here on this idea that she's harming the culture in a certain sense, which is, I don't think she's like, I want to marry a chandelier in order to destroy the concept of marriage and family, and I want to normalize chandelier marrying. Like, she's not the Tui of marrying inanimate objects, right?
No. Like, this, of course, what you're saying, Daniel, is this needs other people to be complicit in this.
If Daniel, do we know that?
Well, I'm making a certain assumption, of course, James. But
okay.
Just from everything I've read about this woman, and it's not that much, I just don't think she has the intellectual capacity to be the Tui of chandelier
that's
fucking.
That's not what I'm saying. Yeah.
Like, her professors at school, who taught her there was no difference between an inanimate object and a human being, they are certainly damaging society. I think she is a result of a damaged society, I guess, is how I would look at it.
Yeah.
I just want to be careful. It's the chicken and the egg.
I just want to be careful basically running around saying that everyone who's doing something immoral is damaging society.
I have no problem. Look, do whatever you want, right? Like, you know me, I'm straight edge, but do I go around and tell people not to drink? Like, am I running around bars slapping drinks out of people's hands? No, I'm not. But it's much different when you're then interviewed by the news and you go, I'm not harming anyone. Like, fuck off. Just say, this makes me happy. Do you see the difference between the two of them? One is other-centric and one is self-centric. One is, I enjoy this. The other is, I'm not harming anyone. When I would even argue when you say that, you have an awareness that you're causing damage.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's undisputable. Otherwise, she would choose to word it different. She would just say, this is what I am, this is what I'm supposed to do based on who I am. It would be something like that.
Maybe she's right. Just watched Beauty and the Beast one too many times.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, Midsider Morgan
or something.
Right. Midsider Morgan posted on my status, like, you know, don't defile Harry Potter in that way. Don't get mad at me. This woman's the one defiling Beauty and the Beast by naming the thing Lumiere.
She named it Lumiere?
Yes.
Oh, I actually didn't. I didn't read that far.
Oh, Lumi, Lumi, Lumi.
I read multiple articles on this. All right, you know what? I just wanted to talk about that a little bit because that's a point that hits close to home for me. The idea that just because you should do or you can do something doesn't mean you should do something, and then there are effects outside of yourself for the things you do. So everyone out there, just think about that a little bit. And, you know, maybe that's a thought we can hold in our head as we move forward into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
One of the Midside's favorite human beings is back in the news. Yes, Lena Dunham. Lena Dunham.
Oh my god, why have we not come up with that before?
That's Dunham. Right. Lena Dunham has claimed that she warned the Clinton campaign about Harvey Weinstein. Yes, intersectionality, folks, right here in the Midside. In a new interview, Lena Dunham says she warned Hillary Clinton's campaign about Harvey Weinstein being a rapist. She said, quote, she told a campaign deputy communications director, I just want you to know that Harvey's a rapist and this is going to come out at some point. I think it's really a bad idea for him to host fundraisers and be involved because it's an open secret in Hollywood that he has a problem with sexual assault. The campaign director apparently thought she was talking about Bill Clinton and never reported it to the campaign manager. I'm just kidding. That point is not part of the news. That's fake news. In a statement provided by provided by Blair Beck and Ben Braffman on behalf of Harvey Weinstein, that was a hard sentence to read because their names are Blair Burke and Ben Braffman, and it was on behalf of Weinstein. That is weird. The producer denied any allegations of sexual assault, saying, quote, Mr. Weinstein has never at any time committed an act of sexual assault, and it is wrong and irresponsible to conflate claims of impolitic behavior or consensual sexual contact later regretted with an untrue claim of criminal conduct. Justin, oh my, Dunham, Clinton, Weinstein, sexual assault, impolitic behavior. That's all. Go.
Oh, I thought there was going to be a question No, I mean, this is all the Midside's greatest hits from this season.
It's basically a year-end summary article. Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. But I want to focus specifically on Lena Dunham here. Now, the first thing is, we don't even know if this is the truth. This could just be her, you know, preening and posing for the public. Yeah, alliteration, Daniel. See how people can say alliteration? See how that works?
Blair Burke and Ben Braffman on behalf of Weinstein.
So, yeah, this could just be her being like, oh, look, I'm such a good person. This is just virtue signaling. So she could be lying, but let's assume for a moment she isn't lying. If she isn't lying, there's two things about this that are absolutely reprehensible. The first is just the blatant narcissism of this. The fact that Lena Dunham, a two-bit actress on the show Girls, who hasn't done much else with her life, is like, I'm going to go to the Clinton campaign and I'm going to tell them what to do. There is no difference than any of us in the Midside reaching out to a Clinton aide and being like, hey, we're going to DM you on Twitter. Like, this could have been a DM on Twitter. We're going to DM you on Twitter and tell you something that you really need for the campaign. This is how you're going to get elected if you listen to me, Lena Dunham.
And like, she was ignored, Justin.
Yeah,
ignored.
She was ignored. She could have said the thing. She could have said the thing that would have saved the Clinton campaign. And they didn't listen to her. So this
and
is just
would have averted disaster.
This is narcissism on the highest level. And the fact that this was included in the original New York Times piece that this article that we have is reporting on is just bad reporting by whoever wrote that article. And then the second thing is, this is utter stupidity by Lena Dunham. Do you think that even, first of all, Hillary Clinton probably knows, but let's assume for a second she didn't know. Do you think that if you suddenly told Hillary Clinton one of her biggest donors and biggest supporters with a lot of pull was committing these acts that she would go, I have a major problem with that. I'm going to disassociate from everyone in my life who has ever been accused of anything of this nature. Like, She's married to Bill Clinton, you fucking idiots. She doesn't care. She's proven she doesn't care.
There's so many levels of not just narcissism, but then also just simple illusion. Like,
what do you mean? Like, Gob is coming out and, like, performing illusions? Like, what do you mean, simple illusion?
Gob. illusions, Michael. You're fed up with my illusions.
That actually was not a bad impersonation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Job's my favorite character in that show, but or Gob, whichever. So, but think about it. This it's not only is she making it sound like she's the one who tried to avert disaster, and it was like a day after tomorrow sort of situation, and she was Dennis Quaid. Not only is she delusional on that level, but she's also delusional in the sense that she just completely forgot who Hillary Clinton is. But then on top of that, like, you have to just live in another world to think Hillary Clinton would care about this, even if you could prove it.
I have another thought, like, which is you're telling a political candidate that there's a guy out there raping people. Why are you not telling the goddamn police that there's a guy out there raping people?
Because Hillary is more important and more powerful than the police, Daniel.
Like, probably true.
Just what a uncompromising. See you next Tuesday. She is Dunham the worst.
Though, James, you made me think of, what if there was a time travel spoof comedy based on this, and the main character was named Mina Dunham? Let's make that movie.
Speaking,
she has to go back in time and warn Hillary Clinton to change the election.
Ham
and avert. Nice transition, Daniel.
Eating meat perpetuates hegemonic masculinity. According to a Pennsylvania State University sociology professor, based on interviews with Argentinian vegetarians.
What?
Yes. In the most recent issue of the Journal of Feminist Geography, Professor Anne D'Alessio Parson, of course her last name is hyphenated, argues that hegemonic masculinity implies an imperative to eat meat, and that this helps reify other power hierarchies as well. To study the link between masculinity and meat, D'Alessio Parson interviewed 23 vegetarians who live in Argentina to probe how they deal with the country's meat-centric culture, finding that being a vegetarian itself is a political act. Quote, "The decision to become a vegetarian does not itself destabilize gender, but the subsequent social interactions between vegetarian and meat eater demand gender enactment, or resistance. Refusing meat therefore presents opportunities in each social interaction for the binary to be called into question." Justin, where was it in research methodologies that we learned that interviewing 23 women in Argentina meant universal knowledge of all things?
I'm going to answer that in a second, but I want to ask you a question first. Are you intentionally saying Argentina?
I'm being just ridiculous and over the top about all of this.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear about that. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's called not a representative sample size or a representative sample body. Am I correct? Is that what that's called?
It's not representative of anything, really, other than...
yeah.
I mean, it's in the Journal of Feminist Geography. But the study of which countries look like a phallus. Question.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Florida, like, number Italy, one. Like the most... Number one land that looks like a phallus. Sweden, though.
Yeah. And Caucasia.
Sweden does have that sort of, like, ball sack thing attached to it that looks very, very phallic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's even more phallic than Korea.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, also known as Caucasia because it's the cock of Asia.
Back
where
to
there
you,
are no
Justin.
Caucasians. That's funny. Yeah, I don't even know what to say anymore at this point with how with the fucking tangent we just went on. But yeah, I mean, like, why Argentina? Why Argentina? Why 23 women in Argentina? Like, do they have the best vegetarians in the world or something?
I think the implication is they have a very meat-oriented culture, maybe.
What culture is not meat-oriented?
I mean, you
could,
got me
you
there.
You could go to some, like, South Asian
India
countries or like parts of India, yeah, where it's, you know, like you can't eat beef, but it's a weird choice. And I like that I've started it now that we're all calling it Argentina. That's really my favorite part of this story.
So look, if seriously, if we're going to name like countries that are meat centric, what's the first one that jumps to your mind? There's not a right or wrong answer here.
Meat centric?
Yeah.
Poland.
Okay,
isn't
yeah.
It Brazilian Poland? Barbecue or something?
No, I've... fuck Brazil, really? Brazil? What the fuck? Where...
I don't know. Go on with your Polish.
There's
joke,
no wrong answer except whatever the answer that James gives is. That's the wrong answer.
Yeah, that's a pretty good tagline for the show, actually.
That's right.
No, I was going to say Poland or Germany. Wouldn't you think of Poland or Germany if you're going to think of meat-centric cultures?
Because when I think meat, I automatically think sausage. When I think sausage, I think Poland and or Germany.
Right, exactly. Kielbasa, yeah. Right? Like, wouldn't you go interview women in Eastern Europe? No, you wouldn't, because you know what they would do? They would hit you with their purse and say, leave me alone, you silly feminist.
I thought they would hit you with their kielbasa, but yeah.
No, if it was Italy, they'd hit you with their giant loaf of bread.
Or their salami.
Their purse would be full of kielbasa, so yeah. It's a little bit...
Also,
more.
Kielbasa, no, just... the most phallic of the meats.
Well,
she could have gone multiple
theory,
ways
right?
with this story. Yeah.
Yeah.
The countries... Haven't you ever noticed that some countries have very big sausages, and others have very little sausages?
Hmm. Interesting. Revelation
wow.
here on the mid-side. Sausages
yeah.
are different sizes in different
sausages
countries.
And see what happens.
Yes.
Hmm. Mm, interesting. No, but this whole thing confirms my theory, right? I've always said, vegans and vegetarians, feminist women, they don't like to eat meat. You know they're not going to give you head. Just move on with life. We can just, like, get rid of all of these women. That's all. This is just like
you.
A bat signal in the sky.
I have to tell you something wildly inappropriate, but I'm going to anyway because she would
yes.
not be embarrassed by it, which is Faiza, whenever we meet a vegan, literally every time we've ever met a vegan, ever met a fucking vegan, and it's a woman, Faiza goes, do you suck dick? You're not a vegan.
Yes! Yes!
Every
yes!
single time.
Yes! Oh my god, see? This is further confirmation Faiza's the female version of me. The only reason I haven't done that is because I am a man and don't want to get in trouble.
Oh my god, every single time.
What are the reactions? I don't.
They literally get into the like, well, in that case, it's a matter of consent and yeah, I'm not appropriating the meat for it. It's like, oh my god, just fuck off and die. Speaking of fucking off and die, environmentalists are claiming that Bitcoin contributes to global warming. Because why not?
This is actually juicy.
Because it's a thing that exists, therefore it contributes to global warming. That's really... Vox and the New Republic both have pieces highlighting the massive amount of energy it takes to mine bitcoins, most of which comes from fossil fuels. Bitcoins are often mined in China, fueled by cheap coal power. The New Republic's Emily Watkin wrote that, quote, Bitcoin are contributing to the warming of the atmosphere without providing a significant public benefit in return. She adds, quote, we only have 32 years left for carbon emissions to peak and then rapidly decrease if our planet is to remain livable.
I like it how the actual scientists don't make claims like that, but they let everyone else make claims like this, so it just doesn't even matter.
Yes, indeed. Bitcoin, of course, has been in the news recently because it passed the $10,000 value mark, and of course, as of today, it is up to $15,680
holy
per
balls.
Bitcoin. Justin, is Bitcoin the enemy of the planet?
No, I mean, look, the libertarian side of me, the freedom-loving person in me, wants Bitcoin to be the future because you know how cryptocurrency works, right?
You're asking me, you're going to mansplain cryptocurrency to me, or...
No, I'm not going to mansplain it. I was hoping you would mansplain it. That was my way of segueing into to tossing it back to you to explain it so I don't come across as the dick.
It's a decentralized currency where there's no registrar, quote-unquote. So, like, if you have PayPal, PayPal is the registrar, right? They keep a record of all of the transactions in PayPal. In Bitcoin and in lots of cryptocurrencies, that record of transactions is spread about every single user of the currency. So there's no centralized user. And it's also, in many cases, i.e. crypto, encrypted, so that it's sort of anonymized and you can't really tell who's using it, although there are some problems with that in the Bitcoin world. So that's kind of how it all works. And yeah, it, as a libertarian, and many libertarians are excited about it because it's a way to sort of get around government banking systems and reporting and financial regulations in a way that's almost unregulatable. Unless you just outright regulate the internet, it is pretty much unregulatable.
Right, which is why the net neutrality thing is so scary, because it's like they're in to start regulating this.
Yeah.
That's a whole other discussion. But the point is, this is decentralized, so the mining operations where they mine more Bitcoin, or there's a bunch of cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, there's
so that's
Dogecoin.
What people need to know, too.
Yep.
That's the only other one that matters.
That's the only just because of the name?
Yeah.
There's Ethereum, which is where Roman soldiers go when they die.
Yes.
there's a bunch of them. There's a gazillion. There's one based on cats coming out of Russia at the moment.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Right. So all of these different cryptocurrencies, they're mined, and the mining operations is when decentralized a bunch of computers check and encrypt and whatever they do, whatever computer mathematics they do, to the Bitcoins and the transactions that have already been done. So that's why you don't need, right? One of the biggest problems in human history is the idea that we need a objective force outside of things to make sure things are just, right? Well, what they've basically done is use computers to do that. That's what they're trying to fix here. So that's why it's exciting for a libertarian, is that idea. Now, of course, if someone just invents an EMP and just fucking blows that up, all of our currency is gone. So that's the danger of this. So, like, if aliens came down and just shot an EMP, they could destroy our entire world if this became what's accepted. So that's why this is exciting. But look, obviously, this is an attack on this because by environmentalists, because they don't want this to go forward because they want government to have power. But at the same time, this requires massive amounts of computing power. So it's a lot easier to get to this being harmful to the environment. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, as far as like their ridiculous things they're saying, they've come up with a lot worse than this. Like when they were like, Islamophobia causes global warming.
Yeah.
That's a lot harder to get to than this, where it's like, well, they're using a lot of computers.
It's funny.
That takes a lot of energy.
The logic is
carbon
Islamophobia causes global warming, and then global warming causes ISIS. So Islamophobia causes ISIS, which causes Islamophobia. Oh, no! We're in an infinite loop.
Positive feedback reactions.
That's right.
Here's what jumped out at me most in this story, is they talk about, they say that Bitcoin, the manufacture of Bitcoin, requires all this energy for no measurable social good, or they say something like that. And that is so hilariously Marxist in its way of understanding the world. It's just literally like, you are unable to understand the value of anything but just brute physical matter. And, like, I'm not saying that the value of Bitcoin is easy to understand. Like, I just understood it, like, maybe 6 months ago after kind of reading about it for a while. I think it took a long time but they're just going to dismiss it like, oh, well, you're just moving numbers around in a computer. How could that possibly be, like, a value somehow? They just, it's like the sort of person who says that, oh, well, the investors are just, you know, shuffling money around. They're not doing anything for the economy. It's just like, man, like, you can't grasp anything if that's your – you can't grasp the value of anything if that's your attitude.
James, go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Justin. It's your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was going to say that Bitcoin had a rhetorical problem to start with, and that's that it began on the internet. And 99% of things that begin on the internet are shit.
Hence this show.
Yes, exactly. No, I ignored Bitcoin for years. I mean, I don't very often say, like, shit, I wish I had invested in things. But, like, it must have been 5 years ago that nerdcore rapper Whitey Cracker started talking about Bitcoin all the time. And I was like, eh, Whitey Cracker's crazy. But if I had
his name is Whitey Cracker.
Yes.
Okay.
But he has a song called Bitcoin Baron. And if I had taken that song seriously and invested $5... $5 5 years ago, I would have $15,000 right now.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing where everyone has these stories now. It's like, back in my day, Bitcoin was 9 cents or whatever. But like, I was being told about Bitcoin in like literally 2010, like the year after it was invented. People were trying to get me to set up a rig on my computer because I had a really nice computer at the time to mine Bitcoin. And I was like, this is an enormous waste of time. I'll just use PayPal. So
shit.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with the mining operations, and I talked to Midsider William about this, who works in information security, he worked for major companies. So the problem with the mining operations, rather than just buying Bitcoin and just holding onto it like any other investment, is I don't remember what the law is, but it's the law that of the exponential increase in computing power. So your machine will be obsolete within 18 months. So you have to make the investment on your machine in Bitcoin within that 18 months because somebody else will be mining it faster than you in 18 months.
Yes. In 2010, you could do it with your standard laptop because no one was into it. Now there's a great documentary about this on Netflix. I think it's just called Bitcoin, where a guy like bought a computer, like the supercomputer basically. And because of a train derailment, the computer was delayed by 7 days. And thus he missed out on the entire window where that computer was actually good enough to mine Bitcoin and make back the amount of money he paid for it.
Wow.
Yeah. Craziness.
Was it because of Orrin Boyle?
Yes, it was because of Orrin Boyle. Speaking of Orrin Boyle, James, I need the official...
No one can blame us.
I need you, James, to give me the official objectivist position on Bitcoin. Because it seems like in my newsfeed, half the objectivists think it's the coolest, greatest, you know, free market thing ever, and half think it's this nonsense fiat currency detached from nothing, and if we don't use solid gold bricks to pay for everything, we're communists.
I used to be in the solid gold brick camp, mm-hmm. which was I felt like, oh, you know, these damn libertarians, they're just, you know, they don't believe in objective value. So Bitcoin, you know, like Bitcoin doesn't have objective value. It's basically the same as just arbitrarily deciding to value bottle caps and just using those as coins. You know, you know, basically pretend to like you're eight and you're just pretending to play with money. That's what I thought it was at first. And the reason I thought this is because, basically every libertarian who talked about Bitcoin talked about the inherent subjectivity of value and how like Bitcoin is no different than anything else because nothing has objective value, blah, 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 blah. But the more I looked into it, I had a conversation with my friend and it took me, I think, like 2 hours to mine the information from my friend to like really ask him these questions. And I don't even know how to explain this, but at the end of the day, I decided that it does, in fact, have objective value. To put it quickly, I can't prove this, but to put it quickly, when you own a Bitcoin, you're in effect owning a part of the transaction network that allows for the transfer of value. So the shares of the transaction network are actually used as the currency. So as far as I can tell, you are owning something that does have objective value because you're owning part of the network that enables people to trade in goods and stuff like
that. It's an interesting way. When you start thinking about it in terms of shares, like I own a share of Bitcoin instead of an actual Bitcoin, it actually makes a little bit more sense if you start thinking of it with that metaphor.
I don't want to go like too deep philosophically, but I would actually argue from a Lockean perspective where your labor or whatever work you add to the land is what gives it value. Where it's the same Bitcoin. Thing here, right? Well, Bitcoin is just an example of the land, right? It's you're taking a computer,
you drill into the ground, and you dig up Bitcoins.
Yes.
Now you've mined them, and they're yours
metaphorically. So it's weird because we don't always like we think concrete as something like you know. Concrete is anything that's observable by the five senses. It's not just something you can touch. But we think of concrete as only something you can touch. There's definitely concrete things going on when Bitcoins are mined. And, yeah, it's just when Bitcoins are mined. The whole computing process. That is a very concrete action that only humans can make happen because they have to create computers and such.
Yeah. I'd be more in if we called it fracking for Bitcoins. I'm just saying. I'd be much more in. But speaking of things...
We need to get our rhetoric integrated here. We need integrated rhetoric across our platforms.
That's right. I want to frack for Bitcoins. Okay. But speaking of things that are totally worthless, Cracked Magazine has laid off 25 employees. As this article says, the great digital media purge continues. The EW Scripps company announced that it had bought the then-profitable humor site Cracked in April of 2016 for $39 million. Cut to 20 months later, the humor site laid off a majority of its staff in a sign that, quote, ad-supported digital publishers are withering on the vine. 25 employees were let go, and Scripps announced it was writing off nearly $36 million as a loss in its initial investment in Cracked. This comes after the news that Mashable, the tech website turned social justice rag, was sold for less than $50 million, which is one-fifth of its valuation in early 2016. So there's a certain interesting thing going on here, Justin, which is the media is trying to sell this as, quote-unquote, ad-supported media is failing. I think that is totally bunk. Totally, totally bunk. Prager University is an ad-supported media that is doing gangbusters.
Point of order. Television is an ad-supported media.
Yeah. I don't think ad-supported media is dying. I don't think it is at all. I think what's dying is that – this is me getting into commentary already. Sorry, Justin. Is like
no, go ahead.
Cracked and Mashable a year ago or a little more than a year ago made a conscientious decision to turn to social justice. In fact, the company that bought Mashable said they're going to go away from cultural commentary and back to doing what they do best, tech reporting. Yeah, that's the only thing we wanted you to fucking do in the first place. No one asked you to be a social justice rag. We asked you to report on tech, and then you started reporting on, are there enough trans intersectional feminist coders at Google? And we were like, go fuck yourself, Mashable. No one cares. The same with Cracked. Cracked was funny when it was making dick jokes and lists of the 25 top farts from last year. Then they started talking about, are farts racist? And we were like, okay, it's over. Fuck you, Cracked. Fuck you, Mashable. I hope you both wither and die on the vine. If you want to go back to doing what you did before this, actually being funny and reporting on tech news, power to you. But just like Gizmodo, I will never visit you again. Justin, reactions?
There is so much in what you said I want to respond to. First of all, when was Cracked ever funny?
Well, they had some amusing things. But the point being, like, it was...
They had some good farts.
It was well-trafficked when it was just a listicle of weird... crap as opposed to social justice nonsense.
That's true. Second of all, if farts were racist, they would be even better.
I actually misspoke. I meant to say is fart humor racist, but coming out as are farts racist is actually an article for Woke or Joke, but
also they handled the conscientious part and we handled the objecting part. So they were conscientious. We were the objectors. And I'm probably just going to act as a pivot for this article between you and James. But I would argue that the news media is wrong. This is proof that ad-based media is succeeding because it's giving the people what they want and killing what they don't want. True. They don't want this social justice crap, so no one's going to it. So no ads are being bought for that. So the site's dying.
That's right. When did Grantland fail, by the way? When it turned to social justice bullshit instead of sports reporting. Why is ESPN tanking? Because they've become the social justice sports network and no one wants to watch it anymore. It's a really simple observation.
The problem with ESPN and Grantland is they have Disney money propping them up and whoever's in charge is still duping Disney into paying for Grantland and ESPN.
Well, Grantland's done, remember. Grantland is a failure. They're gone. ESPN is still being propped up.
Wait. I thought Grantland still existed. I thought they're trying to reboot it.
Maybe they're trying to reboot it, but it's currently not doing anything.
James, I'm going to Google this. You talk about some stuff.
All right. I'm here to talk about stuff, you guys. We got so much stuff here on the Midside.
Quick break to tell you about stuff. I'm interrupting you now. I went to Grantland.com, and there are pictures of a bunch of people, one of them being Seth Rogen and one of them being David Duchovny, and it says, "It was a good run. To access the Grantland archives, click the navigation above. Thanks for sharing the last 4 years with us."
Told you.
I thought they were still publishing.
No.
Wow.
That was one of our first big successes as the Midside, was we abolished Grantland.
Yeah, but I was ignoring that because I thought that they tried to restart it after we did that, but now I feel even better. Fuck you, Grantland.
That's right.
The Midside rules.
Midside forever.
Midside, 1,000 years Midside. Hurrah for Midside.
That's right.
No, James,
I always thought this was...
Good.
I always thought this was just... It's just bad content when you do stuff like this. I remember there was a short period where Dane Cook would just suck Obama's dick basically the entire time during his comedy sketches. And it wasn't just that I was pissed off at him. Like, I got over that fairly quickly. It was just boring. It's just not that interesting to hear, you know, people who aren't experts talk about politics.
Yeah.
Even if, especially if you're trying to be funny, because, I mean, especially now when people know how serious this stuff is, I think. And so hopefully, you know, the Jay Lenos of the world just aren't going to be as well trafficked anymore. So,
and this is an so old media, cracked. New media problem. I mean, they're still trying to prop up Jimmy Kimmel for his support of healthcare and everything. So, as long as the old media still exists, we're going to have this tension.
Yeah. Well, fuck the old media and fuck social justice. It is a recipe for disaster on your news sites. So just stop it. Just report shit.
Agreed. And if we're going to talk about new media, we need to talk about, you know, what it means to create and what it means to do things independently on your own. So let's talk about that in the review section of The Hole for Romantic with JML. This week, I saw The Disaster Artist. It is directed by, starring, and produced by James Franco. And the other main star of the movie is Dave Franco. So this is a Franco brother vehicle. It's also produced by Seth Rogen and others in that whole group of people. And they're all in the movie as well. This movie, and this is where, James, I'm going to have a lot of your input, because I've never actually seen the movie it's based on. It's actually based on a book.
Wait. I mean, if you haven't seen the movie it's based on, then, like, I don't know. There's no point in watching this. I haven't seen it yet, but.
Okay, I disagree with that statement.
See what happens.
I disagree with that statement. That's part of the problem I have with people's reactions to this movie, but that's a whole other discussion. I want to talk about the movie as itself, not people's reactions to it. But this movie is based on the book The Disaster Artist. The Disaster Artist is a book about the behind the scenes of one of the worst movies ever made, quote unquote, The Room. Now, Daniel, you've not seen The Room either, right?
No.
Have you heard of it?
Yes, but I'm pretty late to that game too.
Okay. Yeah, but the reason I'm asking you is I've always had this question in my head. Right? Because there are a lot of bad movies. But everyone heralds this as, like, the worst movie ever made or one of the worst movies ever made. Haven't you also ever wondered why people talk about this one specifically?
Yeah. I'm curious because it didn't seem
no,
to me.
I've never be- No, I've never wondered that, Justin, because it's not just a bad movie. That's like saying, I don't know. That's saying it's bad does not begin to describe it. And that is, it's true, but it's deceptive to even just say that, because there's so much more to it than that. There's so many levels. There's so many mysteries to pause and ponder over as you watch it unfold, the terribleness unfold, and you just wonder just what happened. What is this? How can this be?
Right, but everything that what happened, what you're talking about, only happened because of one specific mystery. And it's a mystery that still persists to this day, and the movie doesn't answer, but it did provide clarity to me. Because there's a lot of bad stuff that you watch on the internet. Like, everyone can make something nowadays. And there's a lot of bad stuff out there, and you can just go, oh, wow, that's bad. But you don't focus on it because there wasn't much put behind it. But apparently the budget for this, The Room, was $6 million. So this guy, Tommy Wiseau, who is nobody, nobody knows who he is. He's just randomly living in San Francisco, meets this guy named Greg. They move to LA together. And then at a certain point, Greg has an agent, but the agent's not calling him back. Tommy's just getting rejected all over the place. Everyone's telling him he should be a villain. He doesn't want to be. He's got this really thick accent. It's clearly the accent is from Eastern Europe somewhere. I've read rumors that he's Polish. I believe that 100%. And he's claiming he's from Louisiana. He's very obsessed with American and being American and being the American hero. And then Greg goes, well, what if we could just make our own movie? And Tommy goes, that's a great idea. Let's make the movie. And then they make the movie. And all of this, including the apartment that Tommy and Greg lived in LA, are just all funded by Tommy Wiseau. And nobody has any idea where the money comes from. They still don't know to this day. At the end of the movie, it pops up. And to this day, nobody knows where he made his money from. So it's really interesting in that way, because I'm talking about Daniel. He paid for a premiere on Hollywood Boulevard and a spotlight on Hollywood Boulevard. That's how much money this guy put into this. So I get now why this is such a big deal, because it's like, how could somebody with so much money do something so incompetently? Because at the very least, you could hire people to come in and do this on some sort of respectable level. And I mean respectable from just a technical standpoint. I don't even mean artistically. But that's the one side of it where people really shit on Tommy. And that's in the movie. And that comes out in the movie where they show he has a very deeply narcissistic side to his personality. At one point in the movie, Greg's girlfriend and he run into Bryan Cranston. I don't know, for some reason in Hollywood, all roads lead to Bryan Cranston right now. It's like, are you on Harvey Weinstein's side or Bryan Cranston's side? Like, those are the two sides in Hollywood right now. But at some point, they run in, and she knows him from, like, yoga class or something. And he's like, oh, I'm directing an episode of Malcolm in the Middle, Greg. You know, I really like your beard. Do you want to play a lumberjack guest character? And he's like, yeah, I do. And then Greg goes to Tommy. And Tommy, who's mad that Greg is better looking and younger and gets attention from girls and moved in with his girlfriend and, you know, has a higher career trajectory and potential, doesn't want to let him do anything. So Greg says to him, can we rearrange the shooting schedule so I can go shoot Malcolm in the Middle and then I can do my beard shaving scene later? And Tommy's like, no, we have to do it now. We have to stick to the schedule. This is, by the way, they're already behind like 20 days on the shooting schedule. That's a whole other thing. But you know, Tommy says no, and Greg acquiesces and gives in and shaves his beard and loses his career potential to go the mainstream.
Oh, my God.
And he ends up just doing this movie with Tommy. And apparently these two still work together today and make movies together today. They're in something called Best Friends, which also has I can't remember his name. Andre from The League. What's the actor's name, Daniel?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay. I can't remember his name. I'll talk about it. But he's in Disaster Artist, and he's also in a movie with the real Tommy Wiseau and Greg.
Paul Scheer.
Paul Scheer, that's it. Paul Scheer. And they all, they work together and they finish The Room. So there's the really fucked up narcissistic side of Tommy Wiseau that's in this movie. And there's Greg enabling it by buying into this culture of, your friends are the most important thing in your life. So if it was me personally, I would have walked out at that point and I would have just said, okay, fuck it. You do what you want with this movie. It's already fucked up. Like, I get it. You have loyalty to your friends. you know how loyal I am. I'm a very loyal person. But at a certain point, you just have to be like, well, you're now harming me for this piece of shit. I understand you've put your heart and soul into this, but that's where the narcissism comes in. It's what you want over, no matter how much you're harming the people on this set, and no matter how much you're harming me when I want to go do something else. So a healthy person would have walked out there. So there's a lot of enabling going on in here, which they're showing. And then there's the other side of this, where he did stick to a vision, and he did do what he wanted. And in Hollywood, and just as an artist in general, there's something admirable about that. So the movie's really interesting, and I thought it was very funny. There were a lot of very funny things in it, and I'm never going to get upset about a movie with Dave Franco as one of the main stars in it. So there's a very interesting thing in this movie, where it creates this paradox. Now, again, I don't know who the real Tommy Wiseau is, and I don't know what The Room really is like, although they do have a gag reel at the end where they show scenes that they reshot shot for shot with the original as impressions of them. And they, you know, James Franco and Dave Franco get them pretty close. It's pretty interesting. But it's very interesting, the paradox of Tommy Wiseau. On one hand, he's what every artist wants to be. He is the artist who he does exactly what he wants to do, and he sticks to his vision no matter what anybody tells him. But on the other hand, he's what every artist fears. And I'm projecting at this point, maybe every artist doesn't fear this, but it's the idea that you are so delusional in your vision that you go ahead and you create crap because you have such a lack of connect. You're so disconnected from reality. And that's what this movie shows. It's really the disaster artist. He is both a disaster and an artist. And the movie captures that perfectly. So I would say you should see this movie if you want to understand the angst of being an artist. And you see that from even both the main characters in this movie, from Greg and Tommy. So if you want to understand that, you'll enjoy this movie. And also, if you just enjoy the comedic stylings of James Franco, Dave Franco, and the whole Seth Rogen crew, you'll enjoy this movie. Don't see this movie if you are sick of Hollywood movies about Hollywood and about how great it is to be an artist. I've seen some blowback about that, and yeah, you won't enjoy this at all. And obviously, if you don't like this kind of humor, don't watch this movie. Go ahead, James, if you have any thoughts now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting commentary. I'm going to push back on part of it, and I think you'll actually appreciate this because it'll maybe ameliorate some of the discomfort this movie may have caused you. The thing is that, yeah, like I could easily see this something being an artist fears, which is, what if I'm a Tommy Wiseau and like, you know, I'm doing all this stuff, but it's all completely missing. No one connects with it. Everything that I think matters is just a big joke. The thing is that Tommy Wiseau has no vision. He likes the idea of having a vision, but he doesn't have one at all. And that's what makes his movie so funny in its vapidness, is that it's just a bunch of not even well understood cliches that he just doubles down on, triples down on, quadruples down on, that just don't make any sense. It's the narcissism that's part of that prevents him from seeing, you know, his movie's a big joke, and he lives in his life in a constant state of denial about that. And that's part of the joke. That's why this is so funny. I think the humor behind this is just simply the level to which a man is willing to delude himself. And it has nothing to do with any kind of, has nothing to do with anyone who's an actual artist, is the way I'd put it. So I don't think you have anything to fear about that, Justin.
Well, right. Well, I'm not talking about Tommy Wiseau as an actual person. I don't disagree with anything you've said. I mean, it's clear from in the movie where he even tries to end the script The Room with suicide that he's just sort of, he mimics what he thinks are good traits of human beings and good traits of artists, right? That the whole suicide at the end of the movie is a very naturalistic way of ending things, which is considered high art in our society. So I get that that's what Tommy Wiseau is doing. I'm talking about the disaster artist as a movie, is that's the theme they decided to go with, portraying this contradiction that, well, how can we use, right? This is what people are missing when they're looking at this movie. Tommy Wiseau as a character in The Disaster Artist is used to represent this fear that we all have of ourselves as artists, is this idea that we want to unabashedly and unapologetically pursue our vision, but what if we don't actually have a vision? And that's the whole, it doesn't really go into this, but that's a whole discussion that could be spun off of this, is what does it mean to actually have vision, right? What does it mean to have a voice? I mean, as someone who teaches writing, that's the hardest thing to teach in a student. I can teach you all the technical skills, but if you don't have a voice, it doesn't matter how good the technical skills I teach you are. It doesn't matter if I teach you conceptually how you make a piece of writing integrated. If you don't have a voice, there's nothing to do with that. And I think that's a lot of why The Room ended up that way. And that's what the movie's trying to play with, is the idea of, as I said, unabashedly, unapologetically pursuing your vision, but at the same time, making sure you're not fucking delusional and so narcissistic. And that's also the balance between Greg and Tommy in there, where I said Tommy doesn't have the talent and Greg has the true talent. So there's a lot of interesting elements to this movie. Daniel, were you going to say something before?
Not at all.
Okay, it sounded like you were going to speak up. So any final thoughts on this, James, or anything?
I'm very busy right now.
Oh,
I definitely have breast cancer.
Okay, these are definitely references to the movie.
Yeah.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa!
that I feel like that line is, yeah, it's climactic, but it pales in comparison to just the sheer just meaninglessness of some of the lines. The effect that I love in The Room is if you watch it straight, like just really sit down and watch it, maybe even with friends, but even if you don't talk that much during the movie, and then you go back to having a conversation with ordinary people, there's this weird effect where you're like, oh, Your brain has to readjust to normal social reality, where you're like, oh, people have feelings and they care about things, because the sheer continuous badness of the acting throughout The Room just warps your perception of reality. Like you start accustoming yourself to a world where people don't like care what they say. They just say shit to say it.
And there's a scene in The Disaster Artist where they deal with this. Where,
really?
Well, Greg, James, you can tell me the exact scene in The Room, but Greg tells some story about like a woman dying or something, and then Tommy just laughs.
Yeah.
Well, in the movie, they keep cutting and they keep going, Tommy, like, he's telling you a serious story and you're laughing at it. And they keep cutting and telling him to, you know, let's just get one serious one, Tommy, one serious one. And every time he laughs. And they go over to Tommy and they go, why are you laughing? Like, don't laugh. He's telling you a serious story. And Tommy goes, human behavior. And that's just his response to when anyone like doesn't understand what he's doing. He goes, you know, human behavior. So this is kind of, it's showing that. Like I said, this goes all back to the idea of vision and how you see the world. So it's interesting. I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's one of the best of the year, but I definitely think it's worth seeing. And James Franco, Seth Rogen, and all of them, they don't really put out bad movies. They're just, some of them aren't great. This is a good, not great one. Right. Let's move on now to talk about something.
Speaking of not great.
Speaking of not great, it's time for this week's
Trailer Takedown.
Okay, before we go into the first trailer, I want to preface this for everyone out there that there's not a lot of movie trailers out right now because it's the end of the year. Everyone's more focused on the kind of big budget ones that are about to come out. We have Star Wars about to come out, and then we have The Greatest Showman about to come out. Those are the kind of two biggest hype ones that are going to come out in the next couple of weeks. So there aren't a lot of trailers here as everyone focuses on Oscar season in the end of the year. So all we have is a bunch of TV trailers.
First trailer.
Good Girls is a very poor version of Breaking Bad. So there are women who they are shown as victims in their lives, and they decide they're going to rob the grocery store one of them works out, and then their lives will get better. This is a sitcom on NBC. For me, this doubles down on what I hated about Breaking Bad. The worst part about Breaking Bad was people saw him as a hero. There are people out here who still see him as a hero, people out there, because he was a victim and he did something to control his life. So ironically, this kind of flows from the whole Tommy Wiseau thing, right? His view of the world was so fucked up that he saw himself as a hero, and people did just because they're focusing on the fact that he took action. It's the same thing here. These women are all shown to be victims of men, and then they decide the answer is to go rob a grocery store. Like, that is so fucked up on so many levels, and this is supposed to be a comedy. There's nothing funny to me about this. I mean, don't get me wrong. Christina Hendricks is a wonderful actress. Mae Whitman from Arrested Development, she's great too. The black woman had some very funny stuff in this trailer, just quips, lines. But as a concept, this is not funny to me. Tackle. Daniel?
I was hoping you would just call it Breaking Mom.
Yeah, it looks like Bad Moms crossed with Breaking Bad, doesn't it?
Yeah. Painfully unfunny trailer. Almost, to me, like anxiety-inducing pain. Like, I felt bad for the actresses. And yeah. There's nothing. So there's, at least in Breaking Bad, the show dealt with the moral conundrum of doing something bad, you know, for a quote unquote good purpose, and having Walter White sort of struggle with that psychologically. Here, it's like, oh yeah, it's totally fine to rob a store if you need money. That's because society fucked you over, and that's fine. No problems. That's not the moral struggle of the show. Yeah. The moral struggle of the show is how you deal with Mexican gangbangers. So, yeah, totally tackle, unequivocally hardcore tackle.
Tackle.
I don't think I can add anything to that. I really had to take one for the team here. there was a lot of taking it here. Taking it trailer. Nope. Keep going.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Black Lightning is the CW's latest superhero franchise. I don't believe this is connected to the rest of the Arrowverse, although I do believe that if it is successful enough, that it will connect to the rest of the Arrowverse. And the thing about this trailer is, I don't want to talk about the thing about this trailer because it shouldn't matter. But it does matter for one specific reason. This is a completely generic trailer. It's just like, hey, this guy's a superhero, and he's back, and he shoots lightning. Like, to have a superhero story, there has to be something interesting besides the fact that the person has superpowers. And what did they do to make this stand out? Everyone in it, except for maybe the villain, is black. And I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to look at a trailer and go, this is a movie about the fact, or a TV show about the fact that they're black. I don't want to. But this is so generic. There's nothing to this story that makes it unique. It's just a guy with superpowers who used to be a hero and now is a hero again. There's nothing unique about that. So I have to talk about that. And that's not appealing to me. A show that is just about the fact that it's a black superhero and it's a black family, that doesn't appeal to me. At least the show Black-ish, it's a joke about the fact that they're black. Right? It's saying, like, what if we did a traditional family sitcom except they were black, and it's self-aware in that way. That's why it's called Black-ish. So I can, you know, I don't watch that show, but anytime I've seen it, it's been amusing, and I can respect that. I can go, okay, they're doing that in an intelligent way. Here it's just like, what if we had a superhero except he was black? Fuck you and your collectivist racism. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, you said something about an Arrowverse. I don't really know what that is. It's on the BW, the WB, the some the CW, the, I don't know, a channel that I'm never going to watch.
KFC.
It's on the KFC. That's a no for me. So, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, tackle.
Tackle.
James?
There's something about certain networks, I've said this before, that they manage to, even just in their visual aesthetic, managed to just suck the life out of any show they do. One ABC Family does this, because I watched this show that was a adaptation of a novel I really liked. Is the novel was Wizard's First Rule, and it was just a shot by shot reproduction of the novel. So you'd think there'd be some value to it, because at least they didn't like go against the meaning of the novel or anything. But they just they did everything that was in the novel, but they just sucked the life out of every scene. This, even though, yeah, like I agree with everything you're saying, Justin, but anything that would have been good about this is just has that inexplicable just black hole deep in the center of its heart that just sucks anything good about it out. Like, I don't know. It's just whoever makes these could suck the fun out of a blowjob.
I'm assuming
I'll tell you that's a tackle.
There we go.
Tackle.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. By the way, it's not ABC's Family anymore. It's Freeform. Get it right.
That's right.
Freeform.
Final trailer.
Dark is the Eastern European version of Stranger Things that devolves into the Faraday game. Now, I don't know. Does anyone know what country this is from? I don't know what the language was.
I think it's
was.
Germany.
Is it Germany? Okay, so Eastern European is fine. Eastern, Central, whatever. So, yeah. I don't know what's going on in this trailer. I mean, there are subtitles, but the only thing I know is it involves time somehow. And I'm making the joke about the Faraday game. This is a reference back to Lost. In season 5 of Lost, when they started time traveling in this season, the character of Daniel Faraday, who was like the stand-in for science, would rather than say where are we, he would say when are we. So I started to create that as a joke. If you remember, Daniel, yes. I would say it's called the Faraday game, and you say when are we. And then this trailer did this. I go, please do this. It goes, it's not what happened, and I go, please say what happened. Please say what happened. It's not who, it's not how. I go, yes, they're doing it. The Faraday game has become a show. But still, this looks like total and total crap. Tackle.
It didn't. I'm not gonna say that it looked like total crap. It didn't look like total crap. If at worst it looked like total crap, just one total. But I would be more into this if I didn't. If I hadn't become a fucking millennial, which, as I think I've mentioned on the show before, I can't watch subtitled things anymore. I can't, because it requires my full attention on the television. I can't do it anymore. I have to be on my computer working on something, or I have to be on my phone writing a message or playing a game or something. I just can't read television anymore. I just can't do it. So for that reason alone, I will tackle this.
Tackle.
This seemed just too much like... I'm just sort of over dark TV shows right now. Didn't look particularly good anyway. This is literally named Dark, so I will literally just tackle.
Is that
I'll just say no thanks. Like not a hard tackle, like mean, like tackle sort of, just like tackle, I guess.
Is that all tackles
to do?
That's all tackles.
Yeah, 9 tackles.
Oh, what's the rule for all tackles, Daniel? What do?
We
take a shot.
Yeah. No. Shot.
If there was one we were forced to watch, it's which one would we watch if it's all tackles?
Oh, that's right. We were forced
to
watch.
So we all have to decide. We have to pick one that we're forced to watch out of these three because it's all
that's
tackles.
A good game. I'd watch Dark.
Why?
It wouldn't be that big of a deal. I would just be like, okay, Dark, I guess. Like, I'll try it.
I think I would watch Dark only because it does look like Stranger Things meets It. And... kind of okay with that again,
which, by the way, the South Park season finale referenced that and made fun of how they were like the same thing.
Funny. Yeah. You, Justin?
I would watch Black Lightning because it is by Greg Berlanti, and I do like all his other shows. You know, I even liked Everwood back in the day, so I think that's the one that I could stand the most. I mean, I'd get really annoyed that it would just feel racist watching it, and like the fact that I'm supporting it, but I think it's the one that is most stylistically in line with what I would like. Like, I think Dark would make me want to shoot myself, and I would get even angrier at Good Girls. So I just think the one that would cause me the least discomfort would be Black Lightning. All right, talking about causing a lot of discomfort and being dark, it's time for the year's last edition of Woker Joke.
Gentlemen, thank you for returning to the game show that's sweeping the nation. This is Woke or Joke. You remember the rules to the game? I'm going to read you three headlines, and you're going to tell me if they are woke or satire, i.e. joke. Woke or joke. It can be that all of them are woke, or only one of them is a joke, and it's up to you to decide. The winner, of course, will get the prestigious pat on the back. That's right. So,
are there any listener submitted headlines?
No, none.
Listeners, if you submit a headline and fool us, you win a mid-side t-shirt.
That's right. So submit a headline, but otherwise these are all from news sites or from satire sites. None of them are made up by me. Only if a listener submitted, would they be made up. So, gentlemen, are you ready to play Woke or Joke?
Let's do it.
I guess.
Okay.
If we have to.
As a reminder, if both Justin and James do not get the round correct, I get a point, which means I, the host, can win the game, which has happened before. So, all right. Round one, political stuff. And some of these headlines go back to, like, Thanksgiving and that time, because I've been collecting these for a while. So, just to warn you. Headline number one. Black celebrities are here to reclaim Black Friday for black politicians. One more time. Black celebrities are here to reclaim Black Friday for black politicians. Headline number two. I think the best way to beat ISIS is to join and make positive changes from within. One more time. I think the best way to beat ISIS is to join and make positive changes from within. And headline number three. Maybe Tom Brady and Trump are friends because they both have daffy beliefs about health and wellness. One more time. Maybe Tom Brady and Trump are friends because they both have daffy beliefs about health and wellness. Justin, woke or joke?
I hate you so much right now. Actually, I don't hate you. I'm glad you put number three on there. There's no way number three is not real. I know people started going after Tom Brady pretty hard when his TB12 method was put out, and they've been trying to push this link between Brady and Trump for a long time. And this is just another sort of, when they get these narratives stuck in their head, they just go with it. And this is just another sort of version of that. So I know that one's real. So then the question is somebody stupid enough to believe number two? And is somebody clever enough to have done number one? I'm going to say that number one is the joke, because I've made the joke before about White Friday versus Black Friday. So I just hope somebody else took that joke and just went even more extreme with it. And I do believe that number two, somebody is dumb enough to believe that if they get in ISIS, they can change it from within. I mean, that's the whole social justice warrior strategy, is they integrate these organizations and then they make these subtle changes little by little, and people don't notice them until they've taken over. That's their entire strategy. So I would tend to believe there's somebody stupid enough to believe that that would work with ISIS too. Some true believer.
All right. James, woke or joke?
Man, I have to, I don't say this often, but I completely agree with everything Justin just said.
Tom Brady shows over,
yes and we're done.
Yes.
Yes and. So, I mean, Tom Brady, that's woke. Like, the now positive change in ISIS. Yeah, that's woke. Like, it just, I don't know. I didn't even have to think about it. As the only way I would disagree with you, Justin, and I have to make sure that I voice some kind of disagreement with you at every turn. So.
You're fired.
I'm fired if I don't disagree. Is just that, no, it's clearly the ISIS thing is woke. So the joke is the black celebrities reclaiming Black Friday or whatever it is.
All right, gentlemen, you are both wrong. Black celebrities are here to reclaim Black Friday for black politicians is a Huffington Post article.
No, it isn't.
And I think the best way to beat ISIS is to join and make positive changes from within is from our new favorite satire site, thehardtimes.net. Yes, so I get a point.
Oh my god, wow.
I really hate the fact that I can't follow thehardtimes.net, at least on Instagram, because they're my spirit animals. They really are. Like, they're a straight edge site, aren't they?
Yes, there's so much punk satire on it.
No, sometimes luckily for you in this game and for the listeners out there, the only ones that pop up in my Instagram news feed right now are the punk ones.
Yeah,
because I follow and am followed by pop punk bands, so those pop up.
Yeah, and luckily for all of us, they pump out like 50 articles a week or something. They are a satire factory. It's incredible the amount they're doing.
Well, great name too.
You don't do drugs or drink, what do you think you have to do to
how do you fill your day? You write satire. Okay.
Wait, how do you know they're a straight edge site?
I think they're a punk whatever, and their founders are part of the straight edge movement, I think.
I mean, I don't know. Every once in a while, shit pops up in my newsfeed making fun of people who drink and do drugs, so that's pretty straight edge. Look, it's one of the, like, I can't explain it. It's like a spider sense. Like, if you're around punk people enough and you see the things they say, you know who the straight edge people are.
Yes.
Yeah, you do have a pretty good radar for.
It's because your senses aren't dulled by drugs and drinking.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Yeah. It's like immortals. Like, you know how, like, when immortals in the Highlander walk into a room and there's another immortal there and they, like, get, like, a feeling? That's, like, what you get when there are other straight-edge feeling around.
It's
like,
called a boner, just... Justin.
No. Oh. Don't ruin my... You just shit on my joke before I said it, Dr. Drew. Fuck off. No, it's like, you know how they get that feeling in the Highlander where they're like, oh, there's another immortal. Like, when you're in the room with another straight-edge person, like, you both just... Your feeling of superiority just increases because there's two of you in the same room.
I like my boner joke better.
You're like, oh, I feel superior now. There must be another straight edge person in the room.
All right. So it's 0-0-1 for me, but we're going into round two, which is called sex stuff.
Mm.
And by the way, this first headline has to do with objectum sexuality, Justin. I picked it just for you. So... Headline number one. This glass dildo can be filled with the ashes of your deceased lover. One more time. This glass dildo can be filled with the ashes of your deceased lover. Headline number two. The pilgrims were queer.
That's it?
One more time. Headline number two, the pilgrims were queer.
That's it? Do you need anything more? Like, what more do you want from a headline, James?
And headline...
What can one desire?
Number three, men with muscles and money are more attractive to straight women and gay men, showing gender roles aren't progressing. One more time, headline number three, men with muscles and money... are more attractive to straight women and gay men, showing gender roles aren't progressing. James, woke or joke?
I think you're trying to trick us here because the glass dildo thing is so beyond the pale that it just has to be real. Because it would be just too easy if that was made up. The pilgrims were queer. That's real. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, that could be a hard times story, but it would just be too easy. So the muscles, Manny's macho muscles or whatever it is they're saying, like that's so much of an alliteration. I think that's just a really subtle joke. So I'm going with the muscles as the joke.
All right. Justin, woke or joke?
This is really, really tough because all three of them seem like they could be true. Now, I agree that the first one is true for a different reason than James does. The reason I believe the first one is true is if that's not true, I know we could make that and sell that. So there's no way they aren't already making it and selling it. The second one. I just don't know how you could do that. Like, if the pilgrims were queer, how would we be here? Like, I don't mean to, like, make that as, like, a rhyme to review them, but it's just, like, how do you write that? Like, I don't get that. Now, the third one, that seems like a hard times joke. It does. Like, knowing they're my spirit animal, like, that seems like a joke that they would write to make fun of all these other people, because that seems like something I would say. Like, that sounds like something I would say. So I want to say that that's the joke. I do. But I also don't want to say the same thing as James and potentially give you a point again, Daniel.
Mm.
So I'm in a tough place strategically here.
Mm.
So I'm in a really tough place strategically.
I actually just thought of something.
Mm.
So and in the spirit of helping you out, Justin, I can say something if you want.
Go ahead. Say it.
The pilgrims were queer. I thought that was obviously real. But here's the thing. What social justice warrior would actually want to say that the pilgrims were queer? Wouldn't it be better to say that the pilgrims, you know, enslaved the queer indigenous peoples of, you know, their area? Okay. That's just not something they would say. So
I have a proposal for you.
I'm thinking that's probably the joke.
Okay.
Now
so
that I'm
kind of
thinking about this more.
Switch.
Okay.
Are you switching?
What?
Switch.
I can switch?
Switch. I'm allowing it. I'm the host. Like, you can do whatever you fucking want.
Right,
switch.
All right, I'm switching.
All right, then I am taking my spirit animal as the joke.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent. See how I just did that? I just mind-fucked you.
Just mind-fucked you.
Yeah, I'm...
Except that I have mind-fucked you both, and for the first time, none of them are jokes!
That was what I was thinking.
Oh, I forgot that was a possibility.
He
Wait,
did
none of them are
me.
Jokes?
None of them are jokes. The BuzzFeed...
Oh, my dog.
The glass dildos from BuzzFeed... The Pilgrims Were Queer is a Vice article, and The Men with Muscles is actually a Newsweek article. So technically, I have won the game already, because I'm amazing.
Oh my dog.
But we will go ahead and play round three just for the fuck of it, huh? And appropriately, it is named What the Fuck Stuff. So.
Witness the farce stuff.
That doesn't narrow it down much, Daniel.
I couldn't. I had to include all three of these, and there was not a unifying theme other than what the fuck. So, okay, headline number one. In praise of the one-boobed Christmas sweater. One more time. In praise of the one-boobed Christmas sweater. Headline number two. Gwen Stefani finally admits that her boyfriend Blake Shelton isn't sexy in the least. Headline number two. Gwen Stefani finally admits that her boyfriend, Blake Shelton, isn't sexy in the least. And headline number three, is cocaine vegan? One more time. Is cocaine vegan? Justin, woke or joke?
Is this the I Hate You, Daniel edition? Like, like number three sounds like the hard times.net. Like, again, like, that's a Justin joke. Like, it's a straight edge joke if I've ever heard one. Now, number one is true. Number one was the one in praise of the one boob Christmas sweater. That's true. That's probably Vice as well. So it's just that's woke. Number two, here's the problem. I just want to rant about number two. This is one of the most offensive things I've ever heard of in my life. Like, really, like, first of all, these are people who hate country music and say that, you know, country music is stupid and they can't be attractive. So there's on that level, it's just like, fuck you for saying, like, that's, oh my God, fuck you for saying part of the culture is awful and part of the country is awful. That's why they all voted for Trump. Stop doubling down on the stuff that got you what you didn't want. So it's offensive on that level. And then it's also offensive on the level of, why do you care who another person finds sexy? Another person, don't fucking try and throw this back in my face, you goddamn social justice warrior about wanting a chandelier. Not the same thing. Why do you care? She finds him sexy. Why do you have to go out of your way to shit on the fact that she wants to be with Blake Shelton? If that's her choice and it makes her happy, where's your fucking sympathy now? Huh? So that's what I want to say about those, and I'm going to say the cocaine one's a joke.
All right. James, woke or joke?
Wait, what was the Blake Shelton? What is the headline of the Blake Shelton one again?
Headline number two. Gwen Stefani finally admits that her boyfriend Blake Shelton isn't sexy in the least.
Well, that's just not true. That's not even a story. Like, that's not parody or truth. That's just false. But I'm going to go with all of these are woke because cocaine being vegan, like, that's so obviously the joke that I just don't think it's the joke. But then the other two are clearly woke. They're clearly real. So I'm going no jokes this time.
Bold move, James. Two no jokes in a row. And it has paid off for you because I did it. Two no jokes in a row. These are all woke. Is cocaine vegan is a Vice.com article.
That would be a Vice.com article.
And Slate had the other two, both the Gwen Stefani and the One Boobed Christmas Sweater, both Slate articles. So congratulations to me for putting together an epic round of woke or joke that fooled everyone because it's hard to distinguish satire from social justice. The tiebreaker for this week was, I think, a pretty obvious one, which is meet the woke young people trying to make Christianity cool again. I just used it because it had the word woke in the title. And it is, in fact, woke. So, thanks for playing.
I was going to say, that wasn't easy.
Oh, sorry.
I thought it was pretty easy. Completely 50-50 for me.
That was easy. So, thanks for playing, Gentlemen Woke or Joke, and until next time, stay woke. Or not.
All right, what did we learn this trip? There's that vacation metaphor. There's the travel metaphor.
There it is, Daniel. Rearing its ugly head. Now that we have mixed metaphors. What did I learn other than the fact that I'm amazing at writing this game show worker joke? I learned that there's such an easy way to make fun of Lena Dunham that we had no idea, which is Lena Dunham. It's so stupid, yet it brings me so much pleasure.
James?
I've again just simply had to face how good Daniel is at just splitting every dichotomy right down the wrong middle, and I have no idea what's woke or joke. I mean, I got the last one right for good reasons, but I don't know. He fooled me so good on those first two that I just learned that we got to do more woke or joke. This is such a good show or such a good game.
Justin, what did you learn this week?
What was number three on round two?
Round two, number three. Men with muscles and money are more attractive to straight women and gay men, showing gender roles aren't progressing.
Right, and then number three on number three was, is cocaine vegan?
Yes.
I just didn't realize that. And this is really stupid for me to not have realized this, but I just didn't realize how the world was against my lifestyle this much.
That's right. The world pretty much hates you personally.
It feels like that sometimes. Yeah. It feels like that sometimes. And if it feels like that for you, what should they do, Daniel?
They can reach out to us on all the social medias at The Midside. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all at The Midside, where they can tell us about how the world hates them, share woke or joke articles, share their dick pics, that is a douchey internet comment, right? Something like that.
Dumb or douchey. It's more dumb internet comment.
Dumb internet comment, your dick pics with us.
By the way, please don't create a group chat for Daniel and I and send us a picture of a guitar pick that says the word dick on it. Can you not do that?
Yeah. Midsiders who might be named Ronnie. I appreciated it because I love a good dad joke. They make my life. So you can do that, or you can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all of our past episodes. You can catch up on anything you missed from this year to prepare yourself for the year-end show, the Midside Award Show, where we're going to be talking about the most farcical story of the year, and we're going to be giving out awards like the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award and the Romantic Manifestation Award, and of course the John Rawls Social Justice John Rawls Batshit Crazy Social Justice Award or something like that. I can't remember the awards anymore.
We've got some good nominees for that one already.
Excellent.
There's some good nominees for that one.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not spoiling it.
Go to themidside.com.
That's called a tease. In the business, we call that a tease.
Themidside.com/awards, right, Justin?
That's correct.
All right. You can vote for the year-end awards there. And while you're there, you can go to themidside.com/store and pick up a shirt. Makes a perfect Christmas present. For midsiders out there, you get the classic logo tee or the false dichotomy bro shirt.
It's a better gift than a Snyder makes superheroes great again shirt.
Nope, that is a great gift. I'm not sure what genius sent you that gift, but that is the greatest mashup of all things ever. Because it just.
By the way, warning: those apparently that site TeePublic, the small shirts are very small. Mm. So I don't think. Let me put it this way. The small doesn't fit on me, so I don't think it's going to fit on anyone out
there. There's not a human male on which a small t-shirt would fit, you're saying.
That's what I was going to say. So to our Asian female listeners, yeah, get a small shirt. For the rest of you, don't get a small shirt.
That's right. And if you want to support us on iTunes, you can go to iTunes, look up Welcome to the Midside, leave us a 5-star review. That's what we want for Christmas is a 5-star review. You can do that, subscribe on Google Play as well. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating this show still for some reason. Even though we bash on libertarians all the time, we still love you. And if you want to support us financially, there's a way to do that. It's called Patreon. Patreon.com/themidside, where you can, using your Christmas bonus money, choose to give us a small amount of it every time we produce a piece of content. You know, $1 every time we do a show, or $1.25 every time we do a show. $5, whatever you want, whatever you can afford. It helps us keep the lights on. And hopefully in the new year, buy new equipment and advertising and do promotions, things like that to help the show grow. And if you can't do any of that, we understand money is tight, especially in the Christmas season. But what you can do is you're going to be gathered around all of your coworkers and friends and family drinking some eggnog. While you're drinking some eggnog, why don't you tell them about the show? Telling a friend is the way that we grow. It's the way that the Midside dominates the world and finally crushes the social justice hegemony. So let's do that. Let's grow the show this Christmas season and have a happy new year. Until next time, much love.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
This better all get cut, by the way. Okay.
Oh, this is totally getting cut.